Support for today's show comes from Squarespace, who want to support you. They want to set you up with a website on the internet so you're a person who is searchable and Googleable and sharing your writing, photography, life, anything else you want to put out there. If you want to get online, they're the best way to do it, so head to squarespace.com/cracked for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use the offer code cracked to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. Hey there, folks. Welcome to another episode of the Cracked Podcast, the podcast all about why being alive is more interesting than people think it is. My name is Alex Schmidt. I'm also known as Schmitty the Clam. I'm also known as Schmitty the Champ. And I am also thinking about the Harlem Globetrotters and Scooby-Doo. And in particular, Scooby-Doo is our door into that story, because that is a universe on TV where they would have a lot of random guest stars come through, and there was kind of no particular internal logic to it. There would be this just kind of rural village town that they solved Scooby-Doo mysteries in, and then people like the entire Harlem Globetrotters starting lineup would come through and help children they just met solve a mystery. For example, that happened in an episode called The Ghostly Creep from the Deep, aired November 25th, 1972 on CBS, and I saw it in repeats on Cartoon Network as a child and was very confused because, number one, the Harlem Globetrotters are cool live. It's really neat to see them do basketball in real life. If you're looking at a drawing of what that might be like, it's not as cool, not exciting. It's like a cardboard cutout of the Olympics. I'm not into it. But the other confusing thing was that they just kind of threw together some canon. You know, canon, like the universe of a show. They just kind of slapped together a situation where Shaggy and the main Globetrotter at the time are hanging out and doing stuff together. And I think that's pretty silly. And that brings us to today's topic. We're talking about insane canon that somehow got added to TV universes. One more time, that is insane canon that somehow got added to TV universes. Because one way being alive is more interesting than people think it is that the history of television, especially right before the internet came around, is littered with episodes of TV that people just kind of made without taking any responsibility for what that meant for the broader canon of shows. We have a lot of crazy stories here. We have a lot of, like, occult magic stories here coming up. So there's going to be a lot to enjoy and discover as you listen. And we've got two fantastic guests for that enjoying and discovering and listening, both returning favorites to the show. One of them is Siobhan Thompson, who is a very, very funny comedian and comedy writer. You've seen her work on shows like Rick and Morty. You can also watch her on Dimension 20. That is a tabletop RPG comedy show from College Humor. It's on their service Dropout. We're really rooting for College Humor, and I hope you'll check that out. I'm also joined today by Andrew T., who is a fantastic comedian and comedy writer. He writes for shows like Mixed-ish on television. Also is the co-host of the podcast Yo, Is This Racist?, which is one of my favorite shows around. They're both TV comedy writing people, so they have a lot of expertise and insight here to say, hey, this is maybe how a TV writer's room operated when they, you know, made Boy Meets World, also set in a universe where hell is real. You know, that's a fun thing. And that's, I think, all the setup you need. Also, a preview of one of the stories. So please sit back. Or, again, remind yourself, there's hell Boy Meets World stuff coming. Really neat. Either way, here's this episode of the Cracked Podcast with Siobhan Thompson and Andrew T. I'll be back after we wrap up. Talk to you then. Going into this, I was trying to think if there are times when shows I liked cross over with another show and that I was like thrilled. You know, I feel like usually when that happens, I say to myself, okay, the network needed to do a thing.
Yeah.
But yes. I'm never like, yes, Station 19 is on Grey's Anatomy this time.
Yeah.
What is weird to me is that this is such an American thing. Like, this just doesn't happen in the UK because most of our seasons of television are like 6 episodes long, maybe they do 3 seasons of it, that's it. Even in the long-running shows, like, soaps, why would soaps do a crossover? I mean, they maybe have, but, like, never a crossover that, like, suddenly magic exists in the world. Nobody's oh, yeah, there's wizards in EastEnders. It's not a thing that happens. And then Doctor Who very aggressively does not have canon, really. Like, it does, but their canon rules just don't. Like, they've gone and met Cleopatra, like, 8 different times. Mm-hmm. What they've done in the past has not affected Cleopatra. The actor that plays Cleopatra is different every time. Right. I think that now they care about it more because they realize that people yeah. like rewatch things.
Yeah, internet
especially
responsibility.
In the older, yeah, the older Doctor Who stuff, they just truly, it doesn't matter. Because they were all written by different writers. For a long time, they didn't really have anybody like putting it together and like holding any kind of canon together. Now they have a showrunner. They still, everybody writes their episodes separately, but now they have a showrunner that like conglomerates everything.
But in the past, they just had people
But in the past,
like,
they just were like, yeah, you want to write an episode about space monkeys? Sure, go ahead. Doesn't matter. These right. are the three characters that you need. Basically, this is a very American
yeah.
way of... Because you once you're making 27-plus episodes of television a year, at a certain point, like, you run out of story and you have to add science fiction.
Yeah. I feel like you arguably run out of story around episode 14.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah.
And then there's other, like, 12 or 13 episodes are just filler.
A lot of these examples are coming from either late in the run of a very long season mm-hmm. or several seasons into the show. You also mentioned magic. There's tons of magic that we're talking about
so
today.
So much magic.
That just gets plugged into shows. Let's do one here from 1997 in the U.S. This is from five crossover episodes that led to Chaos and Insanity. And it's about 1997, the TGIF block on ABC, because they would do a bunch of Friday family-friendly sitcoms. And so
right.
that was a good time. And there was one time where they decided, hey, why don't we have Sabrina the Teenage Witch and Boy Meets World kind of cross over with each other, because what we'll do is we'll have Salem the Cat throw the casts into the past as time travelers. And that's our family-friendly shows. You know, kids will love it. That's
great.
It. Well, and it seems like, too, networks want to do something that is intended to be fun for everyone, but also, like,
yes.
what's a wild thing we can just try?
Right,
and then
yes.
And then a staff is like, I don't know.
Yeah.
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 It's always just like, okay, is this promotable? We don't know. Yeah. Everyone hates it.
I mean, I do enjoy... like a little one-off weird episode. I love mm-hmm. those episodes of Friends when it's just like, sure, we'll do an alternate reality where everybody is slightly different. Mm-hmm. But I think that part of the joy of those episodes is that they're never explained. There's very little logic to it, and that it also doesn't affect the day-to-day story of it. The ones that are my favorites in this are the ones where they completely fuck all of the writers in future seasons.
Yeah.
Right. When it's not just a dream sequence
right.
or someone took magic mushrooms
exactly.
or whatever.
No, like yeah. this is a real, like, well, are we going to address the fact that all of the characters in Boy Meets World can do magic?
Mm-hmm.
Or are we just going to continue on with this very naturalistic for the 90s kids TV sitcom where just like normal kid things happen?
Mm-hmm.
Well, first we got Sabrina the Teenage Witch, which is a magical show.
Yes.
But
in many ways.
Yeah.
Magical also to me as a viewer.
Yeah. And Salem the Cat, what he does is he swallows what is called a time ball. And I
sure.
assume they just mm-hmm. sort of decided
logical. Everybody understands what a time ball is.
It yeah. feels like it wasn't dissimilar to bath salts reading.
Yes.
Like it was sort of like he ate a bath bomb. Got fucked up.
Yep.
And then whatever happens, happens.
Yeah. Maybe it was all in Salem's brain. Who yeah. knows?
Might as well be. Because what happens is then after he swallows it, the whole cast of Sabrina gets sent to the 1960s. And they're going around that world. And Sabrina is initially excited about the hippie movement, but then realizes it's also like very anti-feminist and sexist under that, which is like interesting, but
yeah.
also
yeah.
like pretty wild to show kids, you know?
Also, yeah, probably yeah. too many layers for the 90s, I think.
Yeah,
yeah, it's difficult to explain free love to the 12-year-olds who are watching Sabrina.
Right.
That, like, well, free love is like a great idea and concept, but in the 60s it sort of manifested as a very patriarchal version of that is maybe a little high concept for children. Even though they're right. I don't know. Maybe it's a good idea to put it in these people's brains. It's like, hey, next time we have a movement like this, let's be yeah. inclusive about it.
Right, right. Yeah, it's a good message. It's
yeah.
just there's a lot of gender studies prereqs to like
yeah.
history.
That show I feel like had a lot of gender studies stuff in it though, which I feel like was
cool.
very ahead of its time.
Yeah, that's really good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Continuing that block that same night, then Boy Meets World comes on, which is a show about high school students.
Yes.
And what happens is they just have Salem in that episode too. So in the footnotes of this show, folks, you can see Cory and Topanga holding Salem the Cat.
Doesn't Sabrina the Teenage Witch take place in Massachusetts and then Boy Meets World is in California? So
time traveling cat.
Time traveling.
It must. Yeah, I think that
is correct. And also distance traveling.
I mean, you literally
have. I mean, do you have that that closet that can take them places? Maybe it just goes through the closet.
Space and time are one and the same thing, but of course.
Right,
go
yes.
ahead.
Obviously, yes. If we're talking macro, absolutely.
No. Salem flew out of Logan. He landed at LAX.
Yeah.
And so then Salem, I'm not sure if he swallows another time ball or still has the one in his system, but this sends the Boy Meets World cast to World War II.
Which is time.
Very cool.
Very chill time. And not only do they go there, but it's an episode called No Guts, No Corey. And what happens is
very good.
It's pretty fun.
They have fun.
Yeah. What happens is Corey proposes to Topanga, and then she's kind of his war bride while he's fighting in World War II.
Mm-hmm. How old were they in this show? They were in like high school, right? Is this?
Yeah, high school. Okay. They're, you know, children.
Right.
Yeah.
That's the right time.
And then Corey is MIA in the war. And so then Corey's wish that he left with Sean is that he marry Topanga in his place if he is killed or lost in the war.
Okay.
And then later they find Corey in a cafe in Paris with like total amnesia due to shell shock.
So you're saying that the plot of 1917, the Oscar-nominated movie this year, was also the plot of this weird time-traveling episode.
Stolen.
Yes.
Stolen.
Hack.
Somebody call Sam Mendes and demand that he give all his awards back.
That is like that DuckTales comic that's basically the plot of Inception.
Really?
Yes.
On the internet.
Yeah, we'll link about that. Yeah.
Yeah. There's no way I didn't read that on Cracked.
Yeah, no, that's prime Cracked material.
That's a Cracked sentence.
And yeah, so all the great British directors are just stealing from earlier American media. But yeah, so they just like sat kids in front of a pretty harrowing World War II drama.
Yeah.
Starring the Boy Meets World cast.
Well, Blackadder, I feel like. Have you guys watched Blackadder?
Yeah.
The end of season 4 gets suddenly very, very dark, which...
Is that the World War I season?
The World War I season.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's always the problem with setting any kind of comedy in a war place environment is that, like, do your characters have plot armor in a wartime situation?
Yeah.
Like, it really complicates it, and then... To then suddenly have it be like, okay, we'll time travel to this place where everybody's probably going to die and then time travel back and then never mention it again.
Right. If they all really went through time and back. You
like,
would
that's
think,
a life-changing experience.
Yeah. It would be hard to stop talking.
You know
about
that
it.
Time travel exists. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Second of all, you've seen the harrowing like threats of war and you understand how it works and you've lived a whole nother life.
Yeah.
And then you just have to go back to calculus.
Right.
I like that era of TV, which was just aggressively like no one can change.
Yes.
Nothing.
You have
can
to be able to watch these out of order because it's going to go into syndication.
Yeah. Who gives a shit?
And then you're just like flicking around the television because you can't watch anything on demand. And you're like, sure, I'll watch this episode of Seinfeld that's halfway through.
I wonder if these are either good for the syndication package or very bad. You know, in like the way that they don't typically like buy like a holiday episode or whatever because you know there's limited times you can syndicate it.
Yeah,
especially if it's before you had that channel guide, so you can't check a little info screen that tells you whether it's the show.
Yeah,
so you're like, I think it's Boy Meets World, but they're in the Battle of the Bulge, so
it's tough. Like I think that there's definitely a problem when like there was a G.I. Joe episode of Community that had really, really low audience numbers because people tuning in were like, what is this cartoon? I was going to watch Community. And then they stopped watching it because they just didn't wait for long enough to realize that it was an episode of Community. It just was an animated G.I. Joe episode of Community.
That's
which,
amazing.
Look, if you didn't figure that out, you're not a real Community fan.
Right.
But I get it. TV channels also do that sometimes.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, I'm going to sit down and watch my favorite golf. Why would anybody be watching golf? Nobody wants this. Have a separate golf channel.
And shout out to the golf channel.
Right.
Important thing.
Well, and then we've got a whole other Boy Meets World story. This is from Five Weird Supernatural Plots in Famous Sitcoms, because in a way where it was also kind of a Sabrina crossover, season 5, episode 5 was called The Witches of Pembroke, and it's an episode where Eric, the older brother, is concerned that his college roommate, Jack, has a girlfriend who is a witch. And that would be crazy, except it's true. It's exactly what's going on.
Very
in the
cool.
show. And then it turns out Jack's girlfriend is dating Jack to get access to his balcony at his place. because the balcony is where a prophecy says that Satan's tail will appear on the balcony spot. That will send a beam of light through the crystal of death. Everyone's following. Great.
Yes. And then... I feel like if you are this witch, wouldn't it be easier to use your witchcraft to get that guy out of the apartment and just have the apartment to yourself?
Yeah, you would think so. You can just cast a spell that alerts him to a listing.
Yeah. Just go somewhere.
Like, oh, look, you have cockroaches. And also I found this other apartment that's cheap.
Yeah.
This feels like so specifically the showrunner was having a real estate problem.
Or like one of his friends had a girlfriend that he didn't like.
Yeah.
It's just like a...
This feels like a pointed fuck you to somebody.
Yes.
Or something. I guess it could have been a shitty apartment or house.
He just started going off about that in the room, and everyone could clearly tell.
Like,
oh,
well,
okay.
This is important to him. I guess
this is what we're
pitching on. I guess.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm writing this episode. All right. Okay.
Cool.
Is he going to change his mind next week, and this episode isn't going to be relevant anymore, and then he's going to make me write something else? We'll see.
This feels like a passion project. No. Okay. Here's what we got to get that witch back.
Yeah, because the passion project continues with Satan's tail will appear. It will send a beam of light through a crystal of death. And then that will ensure immortality for the witch and her other witches if they also human sacrifice Jack.
Mm-hmm.
That's
a show
too
for children. And that was very confusing. And then what happens instead is somehow Eric causes hijinks where he gets hit directly with the beam instead and then does not die. But the witches tell him that's like Satan's beam that should have killed you. And then... as I understand it, the show just kind of moves on. He's like, well, too bad.
Yep.
Get out of here, you witches. That's it.
Cool.
So just there's an episode where Eric is like...
he's just like immune to magic.
Yeah. And kind of more powerful than Satan. And, that was just an episode of Boy Meets World. That was just on TV.
That's such a wild move. The glory days of TV writing, honestly.
And it's like mid-season as well, right? It's not like a season finale.
Nope. Yeah, episode 5.
It's just mid-season and then episode 5.
Of season 5.
See, that's too early.
Yeah.
Because I can imagine getting to episode 20 and being like, well, we know what the finale is going to be, but we have to have some filler episodes.
Oh.
Let's do Steve's witch idea because we don't have anything better. I guess we'll bring Satan back.
Okay.
Episode 5 is like, you should have enough story for episode 5.
Right.
This feels a little bit like they had a whole Satan arc that got pared down by the network.
The network was like, we
know you love the Satan. We love the Satan too, but...
maybe we could just do one episode of the Satan and the writer's going, it doesn't make any sense. Mm-hmm. One episode of Satan? That's insane. That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard.
That's what happens to our art, people.
When I got into this business, it was about creativity and Satan.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And not anymore.
That is what people think that Hollywood is. And to be fair, they're mostly right.
Yeah.
But the real Satan are the executives who are giving us notes.
Yeah, take that.
Yeah, please give me jobs. I really like them.
There's another, inter-network thing here. This was in 2008. It's really a story about Chuck Lorre, who's a major TV sitcom writer, especially, multi-cam CBS stuff. He was making the show 2 1/2 Men. And according to the story, he convinced the CBS network to let his writing staff and another CBS show's writing staff trade places. And they didn't go with a comedy. They went with CSI.
I mean, it was the biggest show on television at the time, right? Those two shows were the biggest two shows on television at the time, I think.
Yeah, 2008.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
That's such a... I honestly think an amazing idea.
I think so, too. I would love to be able to go and just oh, sure, we're just writing a procedural drama for 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Great.
Because you both write on wonderful comedies and have before, and I feel like comedy writers would be excited to flip to the drama for once.
I would
and then
love
the drama
to.
Writes.
I don't trust drama writers to write a comedy because they think it's easy.
Yeah.
And it's really not. Procedurals, I think, are easy to write. Please hire me to write them. I feel like it would be easy. But
I genuinely think, typically people have a better time going from comedy to drama.
Dramas always need somebody who can write jokes because there's always one.
There's
funny
more jokes
character.
Than you need than you think. You need more jokes than you think.
But I feel like procedural writers, I feel like, would be great at writing comedy if they weren't stressed out about the idea that it was a comedy.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the way that most people who transition from drama to comedy fail is they're like, oh, I have to be funny.
Yeah.
I have to be funny all the time.
Yeah.
And I feel like
you only have to in be funny any comedy, like 20% of
right?
The time.
Like most of the time in writers' rooms for comedies, we're talking about like sadness and depression and death.
According to the article, I believe it was sort of negotiated that he would be able to switch. They would be able to switch a show without specifying the show at the time.
Oh,
is that correct? Yeah.
It seems like there was...
Oh, so they just, like, pulled it out of a hat, maybe?
Well, but, yeah, or he got...
I guess it's like, who can you get to agree
maybe.
To do it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Lori's team got their side, and then it was, like, a show to be named later, yeah. Like a sports trade.
The wild card aspect of that, to me, is insanity.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Very funny.
It's delightful, and I honestly wish that more shows would do it, because especially at this point, it's 2008, both of these shows have been on the air for years, they know exactly how to write an episode of these shows, yeah. There's no real secret or surprise to them, so all you have to do is, like, here is a beat sheet of every episode mm-hmm. of this type of TV show, go and write it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? Who actually wrote the episodes? That's also what's interesting to me. Like, you get
hired.
It
feels like I had to be Chuck Lorre.
You're like,
there's a USA Today story all about it that says writers Naren Shankar and Carol Mendelson of CSI got the story credits for
So they took the one woman and the one person of color and made them write the opposite episodes.
Yeah, maybe. Chuck Lorre and Two and a Half Men co-creator Lee Aronson were, I think, the ones who wrote the CSI episode.
Who wanted to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Chuck Lorre clearly wanted to do this because he wanted to write something other than Two and a Half Men, which I understand.
Yeah, yeah. And this is how USA Today describes the two episodes in a very upbeat way. Quote, on CSI, a humor-infused episode centers on a sitcom diva's death. And then Two and a Half Men briefly turns into a procedural comedy complete with an investigation by the local CSI team after a body is found in Charlie Sheen's house.
Man.
That's so good.
Yeah.
But also, like, are the CSI cast in that Two and a Half Men episode? Or is it just like a random...
It's like random investigators, yeah.
Great.
Yeah, yeah.
Wild.
In the Two and a Half Men episode written by CSI people, mm-hmm. they do a very long sequence of, like, checking for semen, like you do in an actual mm-hmm. crime
right.
scene thing. But, like, of course, there's billions of semen because of Charlie Sheen.
Right. And,
you know, it's a whole bit.
Good bit.
Yeah.
Good
it
bit.
It does feel like... one of those reality TV competition shows where you've got two teams.
Yeah.
And then they're going to get judged at the end of it.
Come up with a TV show.
Oh, God.
Chef, I have prepared for you. CSI. with,
yeah.
Yeah. It looks like a lot of what you've done before. And the
you
whole
had
point
to make
of this,
a CSI, yeah.
this challenge was to make something different for us. You're just providing the same thing, but with slightly different flavors.
That's the show.
Yeah.
There we go.
Did they? So, and they clearly promoted this concept.
Because mm-hmm. it was like written up in USA Today, yeah. like right. turn on CBS tonight.
That's way too inside baseball.
Yeah.
To like the writing staff's changed. Like, okay.
Right. But yeah, like, yeah. what about if you guys switched places with, what are the dramas on ABC right now? Is Quantico still on?
I don't think so. But no, literally anything. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Hilarious. You can write a Grace. Sure.
Oh,
yeah.
yeah. Oh, my true. Goodness. That would be really fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I genuinely think it would be fun. I think mm-hmm. it would be a good break from whatever the hell you were doing last,
I think so too.
You know, last episode.
Yeah,
to
yeah.
do it, I don't think it should be on TV, probably.
No,
it feels like a team
not.
Building exercise.
It does feel like a team
a very
building,
expensive
extremely
team building.
Expensive team building exercise.
Like literally millions of dollars.
It's like an escape room, but you can only leave when you finish
yeah.
the
yes.
script.
Yeah. You get an IMDb credit at the end for yeah, a different
what a
show.
Weird, I mean, I guess you can technically say that you've written on two shows instead of one.
Yeah.
Bulk
yeah.
it out, get that title bump.
It's great.
I agree that, like, you would think especially the comedy writers would be like, let's have fun with the drama and it's relaxing and stuff.
Yeah.
But it seems like also Chuck Lorre proposed this in the first place just to do a... like revenge on his old boss Roseanne Barr story
mm-hmm.
because
right.
as USA Today said, it's a episode centering on a sitcom diva's death, but the CSI episode is about a female comedian who's shown to be crazy, stupid, alcoholic, abrasive, forces men to have sex with her to keep their jobs, and makes a sitcom that is clearly like a knockoff of Roseanne. And Chuck Lorre worked for Roseanne early in his career, and so it seems pretty apparent that he like is working out some issues against this lady.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. He,
you know, in front of the whole
Roseanne,
country.
So
go
he
to
decided,
therapy, man.
I'm going to make a show with definite, yeah. straight down the middle, hard worker Charlie Sheen, who definitely.
Only normals from
never
here
never disrupted yeah. any set in his life.
Learned nothing.
Nothing at all.
he likes it.
likes it. Yeah. He likes the drama. Mm-hmm. Because, like, what are you doing? You're writing the same episode of television every single week. You got to keep it spicy.
Yeah. Get a wild card in there.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, yes, that was just on TV. And then there was just a CSI, like, both universes took on a thing. Because also the Two and a Half Men episode, the body that's found is Charlie's father-in-law, who they'd been writing into the show for a long time.
So they just...
Oh, so they actually used it to...
So they, like, killed off the character, yeah.
But, like, was that the plan? Like, did that actor come into the read-through and he's like, well, this is a nice, solid little gig for me. I come in, like, 4 times a year, make my money. That's as much money as I need to live on as my four little bits on Two and a Half Men ever... What? What is... You're strangers to me. Why did you write this?
Right. This feels like a little bit like... Now this feels like clearly they're like, we have to kill off this character, but we can we have plausible deniability to blame someone else.
No. Oh. It's this crazy CSI writers.
Oh, CSI.
Sorry, Jeff. Oh, buddy. If it was me, I wouldn't have done it.
it's like strangers on a train.
Yes.
What did CSI get out of it? Follow the money. There's something
so
at the bottom of this.
Well, and we've got more crossovers here, and a few of them we have a little promo to play, and you listening at home will hear the audio, so that's exciting.
Great.
And the 90s really seem like a golden era for this. We've got a promo here from the WB in 1999, and this is a promo involving characters from both Batman Beyond and also the Pokemon TV show, and you're going to hear old man Bruce Wayne talking to Ash.
Great.
So here we go with this promo.
But I caught him fair and square.
Take Superman. He can fly, but he's not a Pokemon, right?
Well...
And the Men in Black. They use icers to battle aliens, but they're not ice Pokemon, are they?
But he was faster than Rapidash, moved like Hitmonlee, and had ears like a Wigglytuff. It must have been a Pokemon.
Okay, let's try this again.
Any time.
Gets the whole lineup of superheroes.
Just don't put him in a Pokeball.
Little help.
This weekend on Kids WB.
So what you heard at the end there, the extra voice, was the young Batman in Batman Beyond is inside of a Pokeball, trapped, like a Pokemon.
Okay.
And so they just televised the idea that superheroes are like Pokemon.
Or that anybody can be trapped inside Pokeballs and they just choose to use them singularly against Pokemon instead of the bad guys who were the humans controlling the Pokemon.
Yeah.
That's got to be some kind of like war crime or something, right?
Yeah, I guess so. But I mean... A lot of the Pokemon are sentient, right? They don't necessarily have language, but they have a certain level of sentience, which also kind of does feel like a war crime.
Well,
what are they doing in there?
But, you know, we just draw the line somewhere.
One of the fun things about that clip for me is the voice acting in Pokemon is always like, it's a little it like hints at anime, just the noises that they make and the way that they talk. Yeah, there's like a lot of like, even in the dubbed version. But Batman Beyond is a very American style of voice acting, and it's very jarring hearing them together because they just don't. I mean, they're not in the same show, but they really sound like they're
never
not in the
compromise.
Same show. Truly not.
Yeah,
yeah. And they really shouldn't hang out, maybe, because I think they both aired on the WB, and they wanted kids to watch like a whole hour of TV. But then they made it so. Oh, now there's canon where Batman is a Pokemon and can be captured in a ball.
Right. But also, like, I just, for me, like, I find this fascinating in that, like, who animated this? Like, because the episodes of Pokemon are also from Japan. They're animated by a Japanese animation studio. Batman Beyond is animated here.
They like, don't look similar.
They don't look in any way similar.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess probably the artists for Batman Beyond can do a good enough job of drawing Ash. But are they drawing Ash in his style?
I can't place where I've seen this, but I guess it's Twitter. And I guess that what it is often you see, you know, animators that work on one show or comic book or whatever doing another famous character in their own style. And I feel like it's always, like, it would be unnerving to see it on TV.
Yes.
To see just, like, the gritty Ash, but still with his voice.
Yes.
Or, like, a Pikachu that was just, like, a grizzled cat or whatever the
fuck. Oh, God, I mean, now I want to see it. That sounds great.
It's like just wildly unpleasant. Just like, oh, is that a turtle? Oh, gross.
I mean, to see a Pokemon episode that has the philosophical musings of Batman Beyond, of like the darkness is like, am I the darkness or do I fight the darkness stuff?
Right.
But within the Pokemon world, entertaining to me.
Batman Beyond is the one where it's like a little desaturated. Is that it? It's like everything looks very unpleasant.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. It's a dark future and old Batman is training a young Batman to replace him.
You can like see his like fucking horrible like skin condition and shit
like
that,
he's
right?
Been, like, scarred and
stuff.
Yeah,
everything's gross. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Gross Pokemon.
Yeah.
I like that.
Right, like, when I die, who gets my balls?
Yeah.
That kind of thing. Something like that.
Yeah. Everything's kind of covered in blood a little bit. It's fine.
Yeah.
Fine.
Hey, you, very cool Cracked podcast listener. Yes, I'm talking to you specifically, and the other people, but you get it. Turn your dream into a reality with Squarespace. That's what we'd like you to do. There's probably something that you would like to put out there on the internet. I don't know what it is, only you do in your head there. Oh, what a cool thing to know. Hey, you can build a website with a beautiful template created by a world-class designer that can be customized any way you want to customize it. With just a few clicks, it becomes totally personal to you and wonderfully designed for anything you want to do with it. Squarespace sites are also optimized for mobile right out of the box. The device you might be listening to this podcast on, why don't you take that and fire up a few just random websites on the internet? You'll probably find that not all of them look great. Oh, sure, some of them do, probably because they were built by Squarespace, but the other ones might look all weird and wacky and like part of the right side is just cut off and you're dragging and trying to fix it. If you have a Squarespace site, that will not be the experience for people looking at you.com or you.net or whatever other domain you want to have. Squarespace makes buying domains simple, by the way. It's a very easy way to get exactly the name you want for your site, something easy to tell people, easy to share, easy to drive people over with. That's enough of me talking about it. Why don't you experience it? Head to squarespace.com/cracked for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, use the offer code CRACKED to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/cracked, offer code CRACKED. There's one other canon thing here that's very similar, so we can play that too. This is a Fox Kids promo from 1998, and you really won't hear the Silver Surfer in it, but the Marvel Comics character, the Silver Surfer, is hanging out on the front lawn of Hank Hill from King of the Hill. So here we go.
Mr. Surfer, have you ever considered propane as an alternative energy source for that board of yours? With a little retooling, I could get it to work. Tell you what I'm going to do. Being that you're my neighbor and I like you, I'm going to give you the new neighbor discount and a free t-shirt. So what do you say?
Take a ride on the Cosmic Tide on an all-new Silver Surfer. Next, as Fox
Kids
heads for
the hills continues. Excuse me, sir. Your board seems to work on magic.
Just think.
Now I have an upsell for
like
you.
That, I could eventually be supplying propane galaxy-wide.
Yeah, edit it with the animation question, like, it looks like one of those early Adult Swim cartoons where they just paste Space Ghost into other stuff.
Yeah.
Like, it's just a King of the Hill shot with, clearly from other cartoons, Silver Surfer pasted into it and kind of floating there on a surfboard.
Amazing.
Yeah.
That's like something I would make, like, as a child.
Yeah, it's like a Channel 101, like, weird...
Like, you could do this yourself. We all should have done this.
Yeah.
Yes, this is somebody's way that they get their first general meeting.
You did this?
I really loved it. It was really interesting. Wow. So what were your, like, thoughts behind this?
Fox Kids in 1998, they said, hey, we think kids should watch both a Silver Surfer cartoon and King of the Hill. Very similar tones and styles. And
only the weird kids watched King of the Hill. As a King of the Hill watcher, it was not like you watched The Simpsons and then you watched Futurama, maybe, and then King of the Hill was on and like the cool kids went and did something different.
Was King of the Hill, because Silver Surfer, was that a Saturday morning kind of jam?
My understanding is, yeah, it was a morning.
It seems very strange to watch King of the Hill in the morning.
Yeah.
It does not seem like a morning
TV show.
Yeah,
it feels like a nighttime show.
Like, my parents are asleep still.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm now allowed to open the fridge and pull the milk out myself to have
bad
my bowl
move,
of cereal.
Fox.
I'm going to watch this show about aging men in the South.
The only bad thing you've ever done, Fox. The only bad thing Rupert Murdoch's ever done.
Yeah. Everybody's got one flaw, and that's the one. Yeah, I know it's just a promo, but like, I guess TV promo departments at the time just were empowered to write canon of like people can be put in Pokeballs and propane can be sold to galactic beings, and that's what's going on.
Just very strange for that voice actor to come in and be like, what is this? What is this thing we're recording today? Yeah, I can see 5 minutes after my regular time. Sure, what? What?
Okay,
yeah.
So you're saying the Silver Surfer? I mean, are you sure this is...
Well, that was Mike Judge, right? He does the... Does he do Hank Hill? Am I crazy?
I'll check, but I think he's the voice of Hank Hill.
Because that also feels like he was a powerful person who still was like, all right.
All right,
I guess I'll do this.
And those promo guys are also very specific linguistically. Like, whenever you do any kind of promo or commercial or anything like that, there's like eight people standing there like, is this wording completely right? All I had to do was write one sentence, and so I'm very, very precious about it.
And yeah, that was Mike Judge. They took up Mike Judge's time with...
Well, that's so wild.
Well, he didn't have anything else to do.
So wild.
There's more things from here, and one of them is just kind of a broad, overall entire TV universe thing where Detective John Munch, played by Richard Belzer, was a character people know from Law & Order SVU.
Yes.
He was also on the regular Law & Order. He was created for a whole nother show called Homicide: Life on the Street. Which aired 1993 to 1999. And that was created by David Simon, who then created The Wire. And he said, I think both these shows are interconnected. I'm going to put John Munch in an episode of The Wire. So now all three of those are together.
Great.
And then there's an episode of The X-Files, Unusual Suspects, Season 5, Episode 3, where they have John Munch in most of the episode. Like, it's mostly an episode where John Munch interrogates X-Files characters.
One of the things that I find, this is such a... I'm an inside TV thing. All of these shows are on different networks.
Yeah.
Right.
So, like,
yeah,
this
Belzer
have to
will
get
do anything.
Permission? I mean, he should. I love him as this character. Have either of you seen him play anything other than this character? I cannot think of a time that he has.
Nope.
He's really good at it.
It would be really jarring
if he
did.
It would be very, very weird.
It would be unpleasant. He's also mentioned in an episode of Luther, so there is a UK crossover jam.
That is crazy. He's just mentioned
my friend Munch. My friend Detective Munch.
Wow.
Thank you. Idris Elba just left.
Yeah.
So he's in the Lutherverse.
Here's where that messes everything up, is that Idris Elba is also in The Wire.
Yes.
So this character is in both of them, but Idris Elba is both... the head of a very scary gang in Baltimore and a very scary cop who's very British in Luther.
What if they were like twin boys separated at birth?
Wow.
And
it's
by
like
an ocean.
Like a blood brothers situation. One of them one of them got raised by a comfortable middle class British family and then the other one grew up on the streets of Baltimore.
Yeah.
Man. See, I love this.
Mm-hmm.
This is
really
great.
Exciting.
This is fun for me.
Luther's got to track down Stringer Bell. This is great. We can make this work.
That is like a Gemini Man type movie.
Like
Stringer Bell versus Luther. Very into it.
Honestly, maybe let's call David Simon.
Yeah.
He's not busy, right?
But so all those different connections, there's also, and you can kind of discount it because it's a comedy, but in Arrested Development, they have a joke where it's Detective John Munch, like, leading what's supposed to be a scrapbooking class, but then it's really a trick to try to get evidence out of the Bluths, you know?
Amazing.
But so all those different shows, like, can be seen as being in the same universe. Like, The X-Files and Law & Order are one world because one guy's in them, you know?
Troubling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Extremely troubling.
Yeah.
We do have something like this happened organically at College Humor because we have a couple of fake products that we would use over and over again because we could make the packaging for them and like then you have them and it's done. So we have a lot of Chomsky's chips and Splish soda. But they've sort of spread across things. So like... it happens in the College Humor originals, but also in The Unsleeping City, which is a D&D actual play that we have that has magic in it. But it's also in, I think Splish Soda is in Big City Greens, which is a Disney show.
Because of Caldwell?
Because Caldwell, who's a previous College
Caldwell
Humor
Tanner.
Writer. Caldwell
great,
Tanner.
Great
is now a storyboarder on Big City Greens. I think he made Splish Soda up and was like, I'm going to keep using this. This is funny.
Yeah.
Big City Greens happens in the same world. Weirdly as College Humor.
We just broke another one. This is great.
Yeah, we just sort of did it by accident, but also we're a bunch of huge nerds and it's delightful. I really enjoy that stuff.
Yeah. it is also one component of, like, there's a famous internet theory of the Tommy Westfall universe where everything's in a dream of a boy on the show St. Elsewhere.
Oh, for sure, yes.
And then a few characters from St. Elsewhere are in Homicide, so Belzer is a big part of the whole thing.
I think also that X-Files character changed the character of Munch, because in SVU, I feel like he's a big conspiracy theorist and is like, low-key believes in aliens, which is just a fun piece of color in SVU, but also makes sense because he's been in the X-Files where aliens exist. And right. So that character, it does feel like there's a very fun Gene Wolfe book where just some people can just pass from universe to universe where everything is slightly different.
Oh,
and it does feel like maybe, maybe that
universe.
Is, yeah, exactly,
yeah.
That he, there's just doors that some people can walk through, mm-hmm. and like maybe just Munch has that ability and doesn't even know it.
Yeah.
Like that seems like a fair explanation for me, where like in one universe, Stringer Bell's Caribbean parents moved to the UK and not to Baltimore, and that's
right.
Like
yeah.
how yep. that happened, and so Munch exists in all of these universes, but also there is only one John Munch, and he's just moving through this tight cluster of universes where only a small number of things are different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm imagining
this is not worse than any other theory.
It seems totally fair, yeah.
Sure.
I really thought you could only, if you're writing a show, you can use your characters and you can use like Robin Hood, Dracula, like public domain stuff.
It may be a thing like where Lucasfilm early on decided not to sue people for making fan films.
Mm-hmm.
And then that once you've sufficiently like not defended your copyright in certain ways, then even if it is a quote unquote violation or whatever, it just is, you didn't defend it the first X or Y times. That's why you can do like whatever Star Wars fan film you want.
Yeah.
At any given time. So maybe
that's cool.
After Simon let the first couple people use Detective Munch, it's like, all right. There's a thing now.
All you have to do is persuade him to do it.
Yeah.
And then if you get the actor, you can
you can get Belzer.
What else is he doing?
There's a couple fun things here with like video editors just having fun, but on actual shows where a few sci-fi universes are just the same thing because a guy thought it would be fun in the crew. And one of them is, and this is, it's technically a movie because it's Star Trek First Contact, but it's the TNG Picard crew, so it's a TV thing. And in the movie Star Trek First Contact, there's one scene where they're fighting the Borg and the Millennium Falcon flies through. Okay, sure.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Because a guy at ILM, Industrial Light and Magic, named John Knoll, who was working on Star Trek First Contact, had like the Star Wars files. And so he just put the ship in, and that's what he did.
Well, in Phantom Menace? No. The later one where they're in the Senate, E.T. is there.
Yep.
Oh, Attack of the Clones?
Yes.
Yeah.
So E.T. exists in the Star Wars universe, which means that E.T. also exists then in the Star Trek universe.
Yeah.
Could happen, people.
So then E.T. also was trying to bring Earth like into the Galactic Senate or something, right?
Yeah,
and
maybe.
Then we just didn't figure it out?
No, we're in it.
Star Wars happened a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. So it
this
could
is
be
late
that,
period Empire.
Yes. This is this the is fallen E.T. They're using the same ships as they were using millennia ago. They're sort of falling to pieces.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
You broke-ass E.T. looking
motherfucker.
Yeah. Yeah,
this is the Roman Empire in 500 A.D. just like, well, we used to have nice stuff, but now we don't really wear uniforms anymore, and we're just riding around on horses pretending we're the same.
And then the kids are like, hey, E.T., do you want some candy? Ha ha ha. And he's like, I have so much history to tell you.
Yeah.
The Galactic Empire is coming for you any day now.
He's like trying to write one of those scrolling words for him, but they can't figure it out. The other Easter egg-y thing we've got, and we'll have little video clips for both of these in the footnotes. In Battlestar Galactica, the reboot, they did like a pilot mini-series of just a couple episodes to see if it would work. And they threw in the spaceship from Firefly just in the sky in one of the scenes.
Mm.
And it's really obvious if you're looking for it. It's right there. These effects guys probably do not have the authority to make these universes interlock. But they just are, because they like bits.
It really shows you how little people pay attention to the final product. It's like, a lot of spaceships? All right, cool.
Oh, yeah, cool.
Cool, cool, cool.
Yeah, cool spaceships.
Because there's probably a bunch of spaceships in the new Star Wars, right? Because they have everyone show up at the end.
Yeah. I do think it's like a really good lesson to learn in, like, if you're an exec on a show, you have to be a fan of the genre of the show that you're an exec on. Because somebody could have noticed that and gone, no. But they didn't.
On the other hand, that's how they created Alien vs. Predator, like several comic book series and couple movies, three movies strong?
At least one, yeah.
Yeah. they just had an alien skull in the fucking Predator's ship in Predator 2, and then they're like,
well, right, this could make us some money.
I don't care.
All right.
Whatever.
Ultimately, good job, money.
Yeah.
You did it.
You know, I love money, and I'm happy for people to make more of it.
Yeah, it's very nice.
Yes.
There's one more. This is a sci-fi thing, but also very, very much on Earth, because this is from the article, Seven Beloved Characters That Were Shamefully Exploited, by J.M. McNabb. And it's a situation where in 1993, the show was Regis and Kathy Lee. So it's a real daytime talk show where they just have guests on. And they decided to do an episode where the guest would be Quark, the character from Deep Space Nine, Star Trek Deep Space Nine. And so they brought him out and then did an interview where they initially asked stuff like, how long does that makeup take? And then they also just started talking to him as if he is like a space alien.
Man, which, see, that just could have been avoided by a 3-minute conversation.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, Regis famously just loves improv.
He's into bits. He was on a Harold team for a long time. They never put him on a weekend team. He's very bitter about it. He's done a lot of zip zaps up, and he's ready to improvise.
What a wild move.
Yeah, Regis, all your scene work, you just turn it into a daytime talk show. Regis Philbin.
Yes, and that's not the unusual thing. You have to.
What
play
if you're
something.
A space alien?
Okay, but you're still Regis,
right,
though? That's what you want to do?
Just,
the Reg.
I'm the straight man. I'm the straight man. Yes, I see your point. And let's show some range in this next.
I guess they clearly ran out of material to talk to the actor about, because they don't give a fuck about the actor, presumably, or they didn't.
Yeah.
And it's also tough to, like, talk to somebody when they're wearing that much makeup.
Yeah.
He's got teeth in, right? It's just like a full...
He's got pointy teeth. Yeah. Apparently it takes 3 hours to put the makeup on. I learned from... Because we also found
a clip. So he woke up at 3... Like, he got to set at 3 o'clock in the morning, right? Because Regis and Kathy is a morning show.
Uh-huh.
Starts at 6, 7, something like that.
I mean, think about just sleeping in it.
I mean, I guess that's what you got to do in, like, some kind of those, like, little geisha pillows where to stop you from moving your head to get your hair messed up so that your ears don't fall off in the night.
We all have a Ferengi geisha pillow.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Slightly bigger than the regular ones.
And the actor is named Armin Shimerman. And there's a clip here where, and I think we can hear a little bit of it because it's just interesting. But they later interviewed him out of all of his stuff. But initially they talked to him, ask him acting stuff, and then immediately ask him stuff about, like, being a space alien. They really blur the line.
It's like a weird transition. There's no, like, and now we'll interview in character.
Right. Yeah, there's no, James Lipton at least demarcates it, you know? Like, you really know what's going on.
Armin Shimerman is also one of those actors that you probably won't recognize because he's done so many makeup-based jobs. He's like sort of the short Doug Jones. Like, he's been in so many science fiction things, but you don't know what he looks like because he always has like 8 hours of prosthetics on his face.
So let's hear, this is where the conversation, again, it's on a daytime show for people.
A show that people come in and out of.
Right,
maybe
and also,
you put your kids, you know, like, your kids to school.
Not science fiction fans.
Nope.
Like, this is for your mom to watch in the morning while she's, like, making your lunches.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this isn't even the main Star Trek.
No.
Like, I hope people know. It's very good. But here's where, it's Regis and Kathy Lee talking to Quark, and it takes a turn.
They turn even Quark on?
Yeah. I'm waiting for the day that we have for regular women on our show.
Now tell us about the ears, which are quite, they're like the Erie Canal, you
would
know
you
what
like
I mean?
Would you like to rub one?
What happened if she rubs one?
Well,
I'll rub it and
I'm already pregnant.
Easy does it, Quark. Easy boy. Yeah.
Our erogenous zones are right there.
I gotcha.
So they just kind of did that on TV.
Well, God. Yeah, that's how they jerk off in the show.
Yeah, any DS9 fan will know that that's basically just touching his genitals, you know, in a Ferengi way. And I was just on, like morning TV in New York or whatever. It's great. Yeah.
I mean, and also, clearly they were like, oh, this is going to crush. And then when it does it, it's just like, okay,
well, I guess we'll just retreat back to my little...
Keep moving.
Like, stool chair that I'm awkwardly sat on.
That is what they're sitting on.
Yes.
Because also, like, I feel like the audiences for these talk shows are really ramped up to be, you know, excited and
yeah,
and
they
into
fill
it.
You full of soft drinks and the room is very cold. People have traveled, like, I'm going to New York as a vacation and the first thing that I want to do is go visit Regis and Kelly.
Instead of doing a normal thing.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like you got to coach the audience to know what's going on
yeah.
before
yeah.
this happens. Because even an excited one will be like, oh, what's happening?
Yeah.
yeah.
And just commit. Just bust a nut on morning TV if you're gonna do the bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bust Splooge that Ferengi
all
nut.
Over Regis Kelly.
Anyway, yeah. they're cowards, comedically.
That's the ultimate message, yeah.
One day America will have come on morning TV.
But yeah, so there's a whole, I guess it counts as Deep Space Nine canon that Quark visited Earth and
because
they travel in time on that show all the time, so why not?
Oh,
like
yeah.
he visited 1990s Earth.
Do they have a holodeck on Deep Space Nine?
Yes.
They must, right?
Yeah. There's also an episode of Voyager, or like a few episodes of Voyager, where they go back in time, and like a big bit of it is how hard it is to type, because they don't,
nice.
They don't have keyboards in the future. And so everybody's just like single finger typing.
That's very good.
It's great. It's a very fun bit.
That's really good. Yeah.
What?
And then, of course, the like the Star Trek IV thing where Chekhov tries to talk into a computer mouse like it's a microphone.
Oh, that's very funny.
He doesn't know.
Yeah, how would you know? It's like those videos of teens trying to use rotary phones.
Oh, yeah. I'm writing on a show set in the 80s and watching the child actors literally be like, what's a fax machine is
oh, God
so
bless
depressing.
Them. That's so cute.
Oh, no. It's great.
Yeah, I mean, why would they know?
Yeah.
They shouldn't.
They haven't had to
I don't know how to send a telegram.
Yeah.
And we got just a couple more here. One of them is also alien related. This is a thing I didn't know until we were putting this together, that Mork and Mindy, the show with Robin Williams being an alien, was a spinoff of Happy Days. Mm-hmm. I had no idea.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like there are 20 shows that ran for ages that were spinoffs of Happy Days.
Yeah.
I feel like for about five years, Happy Days was the only TV show on TV.
It was just Joanie's and Chachi's being
fired off
from it.
Because at a certain point of spinoffs, it's not worth doing anymore because the creators
get so much
money. Yeah. Like, that's why there's never been a spinoff from Frasier, because all of the guys from Cheers also make money off of Frasier.
Yeah.
You can get that passive Frasier income.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so if they span off from Frasier, they would also be giving money to, like, two shows up the line.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Spinoffs.
Yeah.
Notoriously expensive.
Yes.
And people
How
love
would
them.
You know?
I know. Truly, the opening credits of our show have, I think we have 18 executive producers.
Oh, my God. That's so many.
Yeah. And then a further spinoff is just like, oh, everyone gets paid.
Yeah.
In Good. A way that's unbelievable. Yeah.
Yeah. Get that money.
Yeah. Yeah.
I guess this is a weird case study for that, too, sort of, because what happens is in season 5, episode 22 of Happy Days in 1978, they try to do a accidental almost backdoor for Mork and Mindy, because Mork is just created for this episode of Happy Days. It's Robin Williams, and he tries to abduct Richie Cunningham into space. And then in the end, they say, oh, it was all a dream. Forget it. But then Mork is very popular. And so they're like, okay, time to do a spinoff. Let's do a spinoff.
So weird.
And then they said, oh, when we re-air this Happy Days episode, it can't just be a dream and Mork has never existed because now he's a whole thing.
Right.
And so they went back and shot a whole new ending for the episode. And the ending is Mork and Richie go to Al's like diner restaurant thing.
Mm-hmm.
And Mork and Fonzie like battle. Like, so now there's a canon that, like, Fonzie can fight an alien in terms of
but
powers.
But did Mork have superpowers? I remember watching it as a kid, but I don't remember anything except for, like, Nanu Nanu and the rainbow.
Doesn't he look kind of vaguely telekinetic?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
That's the main thing, yeah. And so they do a thing that's just back and forth, and we'll have a link to the clip, where Mork keeps trying to telekinetically turn on the jukebox, and Fonzie keeps doing his power if he can hit a jukebox, but he's turning it back off in this situation. And so then it's on, off, on, off, on, off. And the audience goes crazy. They love it.
So good.
Yeah. Like,
finally, a motorcycle man and an alien are fighting each other in a restaurant in,
wow.
in the Midwest somewhere.
It was so mm-hmm. easy to make people happy back then.
Yeah.
yeah. Just a chiller time.
Yeah. So chill.
Oh, great. Man. The episode ends with, like, Fonzie has survived a battle with an alien. Mm-hmm. Never yeah, talked about again.
Never talked about again.
Yeah.
Well, because, again, syndication means that they yeah. can't carry that canon over.
Right.
Because people would be like, I haven't watched this yeah. alien episode. They keep on talking about this alien.
Fonzie is psychic, but other
just,
than that.
Like, right. Even in terms of, like, it stresses me out just in terms of continuity of, like, we have to go back and reshoot this. Why is Fonzie's hair different in, oh, like, yeah.
Nah, the rubes, the rubes from thing. That time wouldn't notice jack shit, you fucking idiot.
Follow the money.
Yeah, the 70s was dumb.
It was
yeah.
stupid. Everybody was just high and drunk.
And then this one last story is also, like, very canon-breaking, and it's season 5, episode 22 of The Nanny in 1998, the Fran Drescher sitcom.
Great.
And in this episode, The Nanny and Mr. Sheffield are going to marry, mm-hmm. like, the main guy and the nanny, they're going to marry. Mm-hmm. Great. And then he is starting to feel guilt about whether his deceased wife would be okay with him remarrying, mm-hmm. Which is, you know, a feeling people have sometimes.
Yeah.
And then what happens is the ghost of his late wife shows up. So this sitcom about, like, people in New York, now they're a ghost. Mm-hmm. It's just mm-hmm. going on. Mm-hmm. And then his late wife, Sarah, as a ghost, not only tells him that she's not upset and it's great, but also tells him that she sent the nanny to him from, like, behind the scenes, mm-hmm. you know, paranormally. Mm-hmm.
Sure. So she manipulated, isn't she, like, on the wrong bus or something, and she just ends up there by accident? Is that the plot of the
I
nanny?
Think that's right,
oh, yeah.
yeah. It's accidental, yeah.
It's in... That's the
in the
class,
pilot,
right?
Yeah, yeah, that's yeah. like I think the
I think
theme
that's a little song,
song is
yeah,
like
yeah, yeah.
she was on the wrong bus and then she accidentally got a job.
That's also
yeah. the nanny.
also, as just as far as the grieving process goes, the ghost of
like
your
this,
late
yes.
wife is
yes.
that's not a good way to move on.
No,
you, should,
like,
you should move on your own terms.
Like, oh well, now I know that she exists and I miss yeah. her so much, so. Instead of marrying this woman, I'm going to find a way to make ghosts corporeal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If anything, that means your dead but sentient wife has against your, not against your wishes, but without discussion, opened up your relationship. And
yes.
I think that's irresponsible.
Yes. But
yeah.
in a way that's like, I want you to see other people.
Yeah. This is very, this is emotionally abusive.
Yes.
From the dead woman.
Yeah. People at that time weren't having these kinds of discussions.
Yeah. Different
times. Poly relationships mm-hmm. were definitely kept undercover. It was not a thing that was, like, talked about. The
right.
rules of this stuff was much more vague.
But that's nanny canon.
Using...
Yeah, it means that all 5 seasons up to that point
yes.
yeah. were a ghost.
A
there was a secret thruple ghost.
Mm-hmm.
It was a... Yeah. There's that Noel Coward play where the ghost of the ex-wife comes back to try and haunt the guy, except
oh.
more wholesome.
Mm. mm. Yeah, and they just broadcast that to, you know, the whole country all
yeah.
the time. Yeah.
Great. Fantastic.
I feel like as we look at all these, we keep hitting a thing where the internet, I don't want to say fixes this, but eliminates this a lot
yeah.
for shows now. Like this, maybe this is just a relic that is hard to get back, you know?
I think that people just now talk about it more in the room. Like... I think yeah. that's just more,
more yeah.
of a, like, a, oh, are we breaking the universe if we do this?
Yeah. And not I, as yeah. much, like, where's the cocaine?
Right, yeah.
yeah.
There's less, like, again, my uncle got me this job.
Yeah.
I'm spending all of my money on the white stuff.
Yeah, everyone's more professional and at least slightly less fucked up.
Yes.
Yeah. And
yeah.
then they invented that question, are we breaking the universe in, like, what, 2015, 16,
yeah.
17?
Yes.
Recent times?
Yes. After everybody changed over from cocaine to Lexapro, people started talking.
Lexapro was the nanny ghost.
It was, mm-hmm.
It
yes.
really...
It came in, it was like, I've been watching you this whole time.
Folks, that is the episode for this week. My thanks to Siobhan Thompson and Andrew T. for being so, so, so fun about, you know, worlds where Fonzie fights aliens. That's just a nice day at the office, you know what I mean? I'm really digging it. In our footnotes, you will find the many Cracked sources and outside sources, because we always feature both, used to assemble this episode. I extra recommend looking at the Fox Kids promo for Hank Hill from King of the Hill hanging out with the Silver Surfer, because it really, really looks like they just slapped together some animation cells in a pasted-together arts and crafts kind of way of two characters who have never been together in any dimension or universe at all. Speaking of dimensions, please follow the work of our guests, such as the show Dimension 20, a tabletop RPG comedy show on Dropout from College Humor, featuring Siobhan Thompson and friends being very funny. Also check out Rick and Morty, where you can see Siobhan's writing, Mixed-ish on ABC, where you can see Andrew T's writing, and the podcast Yo, Is This Racist? With Andrew T and Tawny Newsome being very wise and funny, along with guests about everything going on in the entire world. And beyond all that, our theme music is Chicago Falcon by the Budos Band. This episode was engineered by Stephanie Aguilar at Western Sound in downtown LA. Then it was edited by the indispensable Chris Souza. If you love this episode, that's great. If you hated it, let me know about it on social media. That's right, social media. A thing where just several TV shows will be trending all at once. And if I don't watch Riverdale, I'm confused, folks. Gotta help your pal Al out. Tell me what's going on. Is it comics? Is it a sex show? I don't really know. My own Twitter account, where I'm mostly talking about Snoopy and sometimes Grey's Anatomy, is at Alex Schmitty. My Instagram is at Alex Schmitztagram, and I'm on the wider internet at my website, alexschmitty.com. That's got my show dates, my fun email newsletter of free internet stuff tips, and more. And I'm here to say we will be back next week with more Cracked Podcast. So how about that? Talk to you then.